Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for Shemay Man, Marvin Rome, and a crew. Coming to you live. We got Dr. Bruce in the house. Brother George, Willie Lynch, Kwanzaa, telling our stories, and so much more. Join us. Tell a friend. It's African American empowerment. Y'all know it's no better love. Love for self and kind. So we gotta start loving each other. Oh, oh yeah. That's what it's like. Okay. Oh, better love. Brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, around the country and around the world, there is no greater love than for self and kind. It's 365 days of you know what for you know who. It's African American Empowerment coming to you live, and we have a great show for you today. So we'll get started with the tenets of the NAAEA. First, it's a political agenda. African Americans in this country, in the United States and around the world, must have a political agenda, a collective political agenda that really looks at understanding politics and how to be political, how to be effective at being political in this political system around the world, particularly in the United States. We have to understand American politics, then it's economics. We have to have an economic agenda. That economic agenda has to speak to resources, creating institutions that define our own reality and funding those, rapidly funding those, not begging and doing drives, but actually having resources that we generate so we can fund the programs and activities around the world and around the country as we see fit. Next is athletics. It's your A, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You have to have a health, wellness, and fitness agenda that really speaks to taking care of your health. And we all know your health is your wealth, and you must take care of your body. You must do that. You must take time out for health and wellness, fitness. But not only that, dietary, right? You got to eat right. You got to take care of yourself. But also your mental health. Your mental and emotional health is critical to your well-being. So as we continue to work on ourselves and do the things that we need to do, be mindful of the A and taking care of your health and your wellness. Next is culture, relevant cultural programs, a cultural agenda that really looks at teaching our kids what they need to do to be effective in this world, making them confident in who they are, having them to love themselves more and more each day. And then lastly is the E, a comprehensive education that really allow us to become well-rounded, confident in who we are, and become the best people that we could be today and every day. And now it is the Stan Macklin moment. We'll be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Yes, indeed, Brother Stan is so right. We need those institutions desperately, right? We need more effective institutions that help educate, train, develop, and employ our people, get them ready for the world, get them confident and ready to go. And now, it's my favorite segment. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Oh, yeah. Brother George, are you there? Can you hear me, sir? Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Get him in here. All right, Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What you
good.
Got for me today?
Good.
Welcome to the show.
Well, you didn't give me my introduction, but that's okay. All right. You ready? Are you ready? Brother Marvin.
Yes, sir.
You can hear me?
Go right ahead, Brother
well,
George. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, today's Kwanzaa principle is Ujamaa. Collective economics. To build and manage our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Ujamaa, which means sharing. What goes around comes around. This expression is a common one in the African American community, but it is most positive, in its most positive sense, it refers directly to the concept of Ujamaa. What we share of our resources, whether time, talent, money, or energy, returns to us as additional resources through which we can creatively improve our situation and progress toward our individual and collective goals. The great principle. Well, today, in the Willie List segment, I'm going to do the last commandment of Boyce Watkins, Dr. Boyce Watkins, 10 Commandments of Black Economic Power. The 10th commandment is ownership is the key to power. One of the greatest achievements of Black people in recent years is that many of us now fully understand the power of ownership. When I first started speaking online about wealth-related topics in 2007, almost nobody understood what I was saying. At that time, our community's primary focus was on income and jobs as a key to financial security. I remember talking about how rappers could become more powerful if they owned assets that we as Black people were losing the racial equity game because of how little we had control. The tide is turning. Millions in our community now understand that owning things is how you gain power. We know that being the landlord is more meaningful than being the renter who is paying the landlord. We know that being the boss wields far more power than being the employee. We know that owning stock in Nike is more impactful than owning a pair of Jordans. The truth is that despite the amazing progress being made in our community, the economic revolution has just begun. The real fruits of our labor will come in 40, 50, or 60 years when our children and grandchildren have become world conquerors. We will get a glimpse of our growing power in our tired old eyes through gray eyebrows and lashes right as we say our final goodbyes on our deathbeds. But we will pass with a smile on our face, knowing that we have given our children the keys to the kingdom. By the year 2021, there will be a $1 trillion company that is majority Black owned. Black people will own thousands of acres of land all across the world. Parts of Africa will emerge as major economic and political superpowers. Black people will not be seen as empty-minded buffoons who twerk for a living. Our children will be the envy of other communities who will repeatedly ask themselves, how did black people get all that wealth and power? Man, I think that's I think that this is an amazing book. I haven't read the whole book, but man, it's the segments that I'm reading out of it, you know, I'm definitely going to go back and read that book page for page. But I've heard Boyce Watkins lecture before, and so that's why I know that it would be a lot of energy in just taking some of the quotes out of the book and sharing it with our listening audience. But if that's if you don't have any questions, brother, then back to you.
Thank you, Brother George. I like when you do that because you know what's next. It's the empowerment question of the week, and that is, why is it important for us as black people, African people of color, to learn to share our time, talent, resources, and energy in preparation for the future?
Well, all the things that that plague us are because of a lack of us sharing our energy, our money, our time towards our own people, our group. And once we begin to do that on a large scale, the things that Dr. Boyce Watkins talked about sound very far-fetched right now, but I'm quite sure we're going to reach that goal because we've fallen as an empire before and we've always risen to great heights. So I'm sure, I'm positive that the same thing is going to happen in this situation here. And, you know, so that's my answer, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. A great answer. It's very, very important. Very, very critical time for us right now where we're going to have to make some changes and some adjustments to our strategies. We're going to have to learn how to share time, share resources, share energy, share responsibility, share the load. That work is going to have to be the foundation now for what our ancestors laid down for us so long ago. And as we continue to move through this current time, let's prepare ourselves by having agendas. Let's prepare ourselves for working together. Let's begin to work on ourselves. Let's begin to work on our hearts and our minds, that we will be effective individuals at loving each other. You can love somebody that you work with, but can you work with somebody that you don't love? It's hard to do. It's hard to do. That's why we got to coalesce, come together, understand our differences, and even though we have differences, we can still work collectively together. It is a choice now to work together responsibly and collectively or die trying. It's up to us, but we're going to have to make some decisions that are critical to our future. And that has to happen right now as we teach, train, and develop our young people to do that. It's very important that we do that, and the work belongs to us and us alone. It's a private Saturday. We got Dr. Bruce coming up in just a minute. But first, we got a special presentation from Sister Benita, and I want to bring her in and have her to be a part of this wonderful show. So I'll bring Sister Benita in for a segment, and then we'll have Dr. Bruce come in just a minute. Sister Benita, are you there?
I am here. Good evening, good evening, good evening.
Welcome.
Or afternoon, welcome, I should say. I am very honored to share this piece with you. I wrote this during the pandemic, And I've only shared it, this would be my third time sharing it. And so this is my family here. And the title is about leaving exile. And what I want you to do, I want you to close your eyes, breathe in, out. I want you to relax because I want you to be able to hear what I feel that the ancestors shared with me. I do write that this peace came through me. So I want you to relax and listen. And it's about being black. The revelation of the greatness that I am made of is the beautiful black that drips off my consciousness, projecting my connection with the universe's creative powers that are born in the black void of imagination, discovering the royalty of blackness is my inheritance, the proof of a bloodline filled with excellence. My black ancestors keep the fire in my dreams that remind me of my immortality. My blackness connects all the bloodlines across the continents and the oceans. Everything is connected to the origin of my blackness. My black consciousness embodies the world, creating the backdrop for the stars to shine, the moon to reflect, and the planets to exist. In the black consciousness are the mysteries of the universe, birthing the black pyramids, revealing that all is connected forever. Black consciousness, where the essence of beauty, revelation, and possibility are created. I am black. Thank you.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Thank you, Sister Benita. Great, great, great piece. Wow, that's beautiful. All right, let's move on. Thank you, Sister Benita. We'll go over to Dr. Bruce. Before we go over there, I'd like to make an announcement real quick. 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you want to call in line. Or you can go over to Slido today. Slido is live. Slido.com. Go to 398-0118. That's 398-0118, and you can talk to me. Talk to me on Slido over there as Dr. Bruce shares, and we can share what you're saying that way as well so you can talk before the show ends. All right, 845-277-9250. And now let's see if we can get Dr. Bruce in here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Brother George. Dr. Bruce.
All right, all right.
Welcome. How are you?
Okay, my brother. All right, my brother. Good to be back with you again this week after a couple of good weeks. Brother Kabbalah and also Brother Dr. Lafayette Maxwell. So good to be back with you. Hotep and Harambe.
Absolutely. Good to have you.
That's the way I want to start. Hotep and Harambe. Hotep meaning peace, or we come in peace, and Harambe meaning unity. Kiswahili term Harambe,
right,
meaning unity. So Hotep and Harambe, two H words that we can use. Some people even answer their telephones that way, which is a good idea. They used to teach us, as I embark upon our discussion of my travels through life and my odyssey, they used to teach us in the mosque, when I used to go to the Muslim mosque, which was also a part of my training, they would say, don't answer the phone, hello, Brother Marvin, because hell is low. It's a low state of condition. We're trying to get out of hell, so we don't answer, don't even use terms like hello. You know, hell is definitely a low state of condition. So, you know, we say Hotep and Harambe, peace and unity. So that's the way I want to greet our people today. And I'd like to also ask those who are tuned in, and I didn't get a chance to mention it to you nor Brother George this morning, but send out your prayers, whichever way you'd like to send those prayers out, through meditation, as Sister Benita said in that great poem that she just did, or the great narrative, or whatever you like to call it, but send out some prayers and meditations for Brother Herbie White. Is in the hospital, Brother Marvin. You never got a chance to meet him, nor did Brother George get a chance to meet Brother Herbie, but he would call, was a very, very usual listener on our program. So I'd like to ask our audience to go out, to send the prayers out to whoever it is or whatever it is you like to, for the for good health for Brother Herbie White, because he is in the hospital right now and he's very sick from what I understand. So I'd like to kind of dedicate this segment to him, and want to mention that to you and Brother George, Brother Marvin.
All right. Well, we'll definitely keep Brother Herbie in our prayers.
Yeah.
Definitely do that.
Yeah, because you got to know his voice quite often when he would call in.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I spoke to his brother yesterday.
Great comments.
That you always make good comments. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I was speaking to somebody this morning. I think it was you, Brother Marvin. We were talking about no, it's a brother, a friend of mine from out in Seattle, Washington, called me, who's also listening today, and he was talking about how he was doing, and he was saying his health is getting better. And when we have good health, we do have a chance to win the war or win the battle. But when your health is declining, then it's very difficult. So it's important that we as people try to keep our health up by eating. Yeah, by eating proper foods and eating nutritious foods and trying to fill our temples, our bodies with what is going to be positive. Of course, we're never perfect, but it's good to try to do that. So, because without health, you know, what can we do? You see, got a chance in the fight if you got good health. So we just wanted to start off with those comments, Brother Marvin, and to dedicate this program this afternoon to Brother Herbie White, as I go on or continue with my odyssey. And that's why I'm calling this an odyssey. And, of course, to those who may or may not know, that odyssey comes from the epic poem by the writer Homer, the Greek Homer, who wrote the poem about Odysseus, the odyssey about Odysseus, from which you get the word odyssey. And Odysseus was a war hero who traveled after the Trojan War, and his travels took him even down into the underworld to visit with the dead and all those kinds of things. So people now use the word odyssey to talk about any kind of self-discovery or any travels or any progressions or any life developments. That's your odyssey, you see. So I just like to make that clear, and which also ties right into what I'm going to talk about today, some of what I'm going to talk about, and that is Brother George and I always talk about the origins of words. And that's one thing that I learned very early on, I think, after coming through the Civil Rights Movement in Durham, North Carolina, and I met a brother who was selling newspapers for the Nation of Islam, and he invited me to a mosque in my later high school years, and the minister would always discuss word origins on the green board or blackboard that he had at the mosque. He'd take a piece of chalk and write the word on the board, and then he'd go back into the etymology of that word or the origin of that word. And that's a very good technique for teachers or for explaining things to the human being or to a person that you're speaking with or speaking to go into word origins. Etymology is what that field of study is called. And I grew to learn and love etymology, and it does bring out a brilliance. A brilliance, as Brother George said, in your teaching. It makes you see things clearer. They become more profound and have a greater meaning when you can trace things back to their origin. And I'm jumping around a little bit, but after high school, I went to North Carolina Central University, and there was a magazine there that the poets had together, and that magazine was called Exumbra, where the people who were poets, students who were poets on the campus, could write poems and turn those poems in, and they would publish those poems in this little periodical or little magazine called Exumbra. And I oftentimes wondered, at the time I didn't know, but after doing some studying just recently, as a matter of fact, I said, why did they call that magazine or that periodical Exumbra? And to those who are tuned in and who like to learn, and I like to teach and give information, and so I'll spell it. But the magazine was called Exumbra, spelled E-X, one word part, and then U-M-B-R-A, E-X-U-M-B-R-A. And that was the published poetic magazine for the students of North Carolina Central University. It was called Exumbra. And I never knew what the word meant, but in doing my studying that I've been working on here recently, I've been looking into that word umbra and umber, and I found out that it is a term that means black. Umbra, it means black. And ex is a word part that means out of. Your ex-boyfriend, your ex-husband, or your ex-wife, they have come out of your life. They've left your life. Or when you exit a building, you've left that building. If you exit a room, so the prefix ex means out of or to leave. You see, so Exumbra means out of blackness. Umbra means blackness. When you see the word umbra in the word umbrage, people, they use the term umbrage, or they use the term umbrella. It means what? Shade or blackness. When you want shade or darkness, you put up the umbrella, or shade from the rain, your umbrella. And I came by that word from studying the history of African people in the islands of Scotland, Ireland, and Wales and the British Isles, and found out that those ancient inhabitants of those islands were sometimes called the Umbri people. And I won't go into all this right now, but that's what led me into finally understanding what the Exumbra magazine was about, because I used to submit poems to the Exumbra. I had some of my poems published, but I never knew what the word meant. But just, and that's 40 or 50 years ago, but just recently, within the last few weeks, I found out what the word Exumbra is, which is another thing I'd like to say to those who are tuned in about my odyssey in life, or about anybody's odyssey, and that is, it should always be about learning and growth and growing your mind. Sometimes there may be conflicts with what you are used to believing. There may be contradictions that arise from things that you have been taught. But please don't let that hinder or cause you not to grow mentally, because it's something that you don't agree with because of your upbringing, your training, or your resources, or your research, or what you've heard. Try to deal with it, because that will cause the human being to grow. And so I'd like to bring that out here as I talk about my odyssey. So that's one thing that was going on at North Carolina Central University. And also, as I talk about in my book, in the preface of my book, I talk about the fact that when I went to North Carolina Central University back in the late 1960s, early 70s, many of the students there were from small towns in eastern North Carolina. Most of them were from much smaller towns than where I'm from, which is a small town, Durham, North Carolina. But most of them were from other little small towns, Greenville, Bladenboro, and Wilson, and Gastonia, and Kinston, and all kinds of little small towns, because North Carolina is a state that houses about 100 counties. The only state in the union has 100 counties. And there are a lot of little small towns here. So many of the students at North Carolina Central University were from small towns, and they had not been exposed to some of the things that I had been exposed to coming from a small town here in Durham, North Carolina. For example, before even entering North Carolina Central University and being active in the civil rights movement, one thing that we had to do was to read. So we began to read about the history of slavery. We read about some African history, though not much. And we read political works of Angela Davis. We read the works of John Jackson and George Jackson, not John Jackson at the time, but George Jackson at the time, sold their brothers. And we also read the works of Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. And we were reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. So these were the books that I was reading, or this is the kind of food that I fed upon, because as we talked about, Brother Kebelon did a good job at it, things can be seen on different levels. So I was feeding on a mental level. I was eating the autobiography of Malcolm X for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I was eating Seize the Time by Bobby Seale. I was eating the poems of James Baldwin. I was eating Langston Hughes, I've Known Rivers. I was eating Paul Lawrence Dunbar for lunch. These are the kinds of things that I was mentally eating or consuming in my mind, and that's what aided in my growth and development, and it's the same thing that aids in the growth and development of people today. Marcus Garvey, who I know I repeat sometimes from what I said last week, and I learned something I'm about to say to you all now from Stokely Carmichael, because those who have ever heard Stokely Carmichael speak, he would always repeat a phrase in his lecture maybe two or three times, and he knew what he was doing, but he said that repetition is one of the sources of learning. The more you hear something or the more it goes into your mind, the more it will begin to stick. He says the way that snow sticks on the ground in the wintertime is, first of all, that snow has to fall repetitively and keep falling on the earth over and over and over again. And then the more that snow falls and builds up into mounds, then the earth begins to consume it, you see. But it only happens through repetition. So I repeat myself oftentimes in my lectures, and I'm doing it today, I'm sure, but it also aids in your remembering, and it helps you to make it a part of you, and then you can even begin to use it and espouse some of the ideas yourself from just hearing it over and over again. Because think about it. The reason that most of us are messed up today is because we have been hearing over and over again the Star Spangled Banner, I pledge allegiance to the flag. Think about it. We heard it first through 12th grade. We heard it at the football games in college, in high school. We heard the national, all this. And all this stuff goes into our minds, and it messed our minds up. So when somebody like me or another person trying to teach comes along with something different, then it's hard for us to digest sometimes because of the foolishness that we've had, the indoctrination that we've had placed upon us, the propaganda that we've had placed upon us. Look at what's going on today to make my discussion today irrelevant. The coronation going on in England. Many British, both black and white, are bowing down to and honoring the King Charles and his coronation today. Propaganda. It's the propaganda. So while I was a student at NCCU, having come through high school and been exposed to the lies and falsehood of this system after having great teachers like Benjamin Ruffin and Howard Fuller and Howard Clements and Ann Atwater and several other people, after having this information, and then I go onto a campus that has students from small towns in North Carolina who haven't heard some of the things that I've heard and who thought that I was crazy for questioning the instructors. As I talk about in my class, in my book, in the preface, I talked about while sitting in class, I could not believe my ears. I was hearing young African Americans make references to Father so-and-so and continuously Father this and Father that. They were referring to one of our professors who was a Catholic priest as Father, you see. But because of my indoctrination into culture, as Sister Benita talked about, or consciousness, then I wasn't hearing it. And I questioned them about it. And they thought that I was crazy for questions. You know, they would say things like, oh, but he's a Catholic. Yeah, but he ain't your daddy. You know, and all of that, that Catholicism is really a mechanism used to put us into our places, to look at the Holy Father and to look at Mother Superior and the Pope, and the word Pope coming from the word papal, P-A-P-A-L, papal or papal, P-A-P-A-L, which means papa or father. The Pope ain't your daddy. All of these kinds of things make us become a very, very condescending type people to bow down to and to respect everything other than ourselves. So while I was in school at North Carolina Central University, I saw a lot of that. I questioned it, and I recall having a class under a white professor by the name of Dr. Kowalik. And Dr. Kowalik, as I said before, we were doing papers in our English class, and of course, during that time, everything that I did, my paper would be somebody black. I might have done something on Langston Hughes or Paul Lawrence Dunbar or Arnold Bonchamp, but always something black, you see. And I found out when I looked at my paper, when it was returned to me, and looked at papers returned to some of the other students from those small towns who weren't as conscious as I was, their papers had higher grades than mine. But in checking those papers and doing a comparative analysis of what they were writing with what I was writing, I found out that the lowering of the grades did not come from any techniques in the English language or techniques of grammar or anything like that. But the lowering of the grades came from the fact that I was writing about black things and they weren't writing about black things, and the white teacher at the university did not want us to write black things, and that's what I was doing. So I got a couple of students' papers who got higher grades than I did and took my paper to the dean of students, and the dean looked over those papers, and the dean agreed that there was some racism in that teacher and called that teacher on the carpet for downgrading my paper because of writing something black, and the other students' papers graded higher because they were not writing anything from an Afrocentric perspective. So I saw racism very, very early. And while in that class, I organized a boycott of students. I said, what we're going to do, class, is when she comes in class tomorrow morning, it was an 8 o'clock class, the classroom is going to be empty. We're not even going to class. And I was standing in front of the door and had another brother standing in front of the door to tell the students, do not go to class this morning. And this is to those who weren't in class when I made the announcement that we were going to boycott. Some of them came to class and didn't know what was going on, so we had some people stationed there, and I was one of them, to ask those students who didn't know, but let, we're serving notice right now that we're not going to class today because our papers are being graded based upon our content as opposed to the other technical kinds of things that the paper should have been graded upon, you see. And so we boycotted class, and that class boycott in Dr. Kowalik's class, it went on to cause a boycott of classes all over the campus. Other students started boycotting classes of white professors for the same reason. and would walk around the campus in mass. We organized boycotts and would go around through the different classroom buildings around the campus and turning classes out. You see, these are the kinds of things that were going on in the early 1960s when I was a student at North Carolina Central University, as I continue on here with my odyssey, or my growth and development, you see. So these are some of the things that we recognize that were going on. So while at North Carolina Central University and eventually graduating, and also noticing, too, that many of the classes there were taught because of the time, as Bobby Seale said, seize the time, because of the time that I was in undergraduate school at North Carolina Central University, many of the teachers were very conscious. The black teachers were very conscious. They were wearing afros, and the teachers were teaching from black books, from black perspective, and everything. It wasn't all about the Greeks and the Romans, and it wasn't about Shelley and Keats and Byron and those white poets and Edna St. Vincent Millay, I Could Not Stop for Death, That Kindly Stopped for Me, and all this, the Raven by Carl, what's his name, Quote the Raven and Evermore, Carl Sandburg and Robert Frost, all these, we were wanting other things. And this is how the Black Studies Movement came about also, because what was happening here in Durham, North Carolina, is what was happening all over the country. So it was the climate of the time, the students and the professors. We had many young professors who, I remember one professor from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who had gone to school with H. Rapp Brown. She taught sociology. Dr. Berry Hill, I don't know where she might be now, but Dr. Berry Hill was tough. She had always come with something black, and she was so tough that she even, when lighter complexion students who were in the class, she'd get on lighter complexion students than she did the darker complexion students. So everything was all black oriented and black consciousness at the time. And that's what was going on the college campuses around the country at the time. Of course, Kent State University, people had guns taking over the administration buildings at Duke University here in Durham. And as a matter of fact, many of our listeners probably don't know this, but when you hear the song by Sam Cooke, which Sam Cooke wrote, A Change Is Gonna Come, that song was written, and I'm sure I said this before on this program, but I'm saying this again, but A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke was penned when he was traveling through Durham, North Carolina, and saw the student unrest and the student movement in Durham, North Carolina, what was going on. And so he wrote the song, A Change Is Gonna Come, which became one of his big hits, you see. So the climate during the late 1960s and early and mid-1970s was a black-oriented climate, as Sister Bernice said, it was a black consciousness movement going on. And that's the kind of movement that I came up in. And some people today can't really understand it because they have not come up, didn't come up during that time. But some young people, I can say, are beginning to recognize that and to learn about some of these things. You see, so anyway, that's just it's much more. Of course, I can't remember it all, but there's much more. But that's one. Those are some of the things that were happening at North Carolina Central University. And of course, we had the football, the basketball teams, and all those kinds of things, and the cheerleaders and the games. And I remember I was chastised when I went to a game, and I think it was a basketball game, and the Star Spangled Banner was playing. That was before they started playing the Black National Anthem, and I refused to stand up. And some of the other people who were around me were standing up in the bleachers, and they were looking down at me real funny. I said, "While y'all looking down at me, I'm looking up at you. Think about what you're doing now. Who makes more sense, me sitting down or you standing up to the Star Spangled Banner of a country that has enslaved all of us?" You see, so that these are the signs of the time, and that's what was going on. You see, and of course they had the sock hop and the fraternities, which was another thing I ran into as a student at North Carolina Central University. I'll never forget, I had a good friend who was about to become a member of a fraternity, a brotherhood of black men at North Carolina Central University, and because of the fact that I had been trained in blackness and been reading and studying, what made me question it from the very beginning was the idea of a Greek-lettered fraternity or a Greek-lettered sorority, a Greek-lettered fraternity or a Greek-lettered sorority on a black campus. I used to tell them all the time, you are not Greeks. What are you doing copying the same people who enslaved us, copying your conquerors, copying your colonizers? Here you are, a black man or a black woman in a sorority, talking about Greek-lettered sororities, talking about AKA, Alpha Kappa Alpha, talking about Omega Psi Phi, as the brothers were who killed the brother down in Memphis, Tennessee, members of the Omega Psi Phi fraternity. So these fraternities and sororities were based upon Greek culture and Greek tradition, and they came from the fact that black people on white college campuses could not become members of those white sororities and white fraternities because of racism and segregation. But when black people got a chance to have their own sororities and their own fraternities on their own black college campuses, then they just took what white people had and just made it black. But the root of it, the beginnings or the origins, are still out of Greek culture and Greek society. I knew this. I understood this as a young student of 18, 19 years old. But many of the other brothers and sisters who had not been exposed to knowledge and to black consciousness didn't understand that, you see. So there again, I'm crazy. That's that old crazy guy. That's that old tall crazy guy. He questions everything, you see. So that was another problem that I had and some of the things that I saw. And also in going to class, several of my classes were taught by white professors, because you must remember, brothers and sisters, that many of the black universities and colleges in this country, HBCUs, many of the professors were white people, white Catholics, white nuns, white Catholic priests, or just white people in general, you see. So much of the information that we were going to get was going to be Eurocentric. So I had always said, after going into a class at North Carolina Central University, can't remember what it was, I think it was a history class, but I failed the class. And I knew that it had to be something other than my shortcomings for failing the course or my not studying. But what I found out it was is the teacher was so doggone boring. A white professor teaching history in this particular case, but as I think about it now, Brother Marlon George, as we're talking about, I had another class in drama taught by a man by the name of Dr. Umberger. I'll never forget him. Dr. Umberger taught drama, and the way the information was presented or the way the information was given to us as students, the way that we were exposed to it, the teaching techniques were so tired and so boring and so lifeless that we couldn't hold on to it. So I had always said to myself, after going to sleep in some classes that I knew I liked and I loved the information, but it's the way that the teachers were teaching, I said, if I ever get a chance to stand or sit in front of an audience and to give out information, I will definitely not be boring. I said, if I ever get a chance, and I said this when I was a student in undergraduate school, I said, if I ever get a chance to get out of this school and to go further and to become a professor on a college campus, I said that when I step into a class of students, and when I step into that class of students to get their attention, if I have to jump on top of the desk and do a tap dance and then jump off the top of the desk behind the lectern and say, now welcome to such and such a class, to get attention, I would do that, because many of our teachers and our speakers who present us with information are very boring. And believe it or not, especially for the African-American mind, that melanated mind, that mind of blackness, that mind that was developed down in the interiors of Africa, down in Kush, that mind wants something lively, something rhythmical. This is why rap music has succeeded and has gone as far as it possibly, as far as it has, is because of the rhythm, the rhyme, the melody, the movement of the notes, the sounds of the voice, the various other things that go along with rap music. With all due respect to rhythm and blues, and we all love rhythm and blues, rap, the brothers and sisters with rap have taken it to another level, you see, by using the techniques from the African oral tradition to make things come to life for us as a people. And that's what we have to do to make things come to life, and so that human mind can awaken and to, can begin to learn. It has to have some life in it. So therefore, Master P and Kool Herc and some of the other early rappers, and Jay-Z and some of the things they used to do, they had Tupac Shakur. By the way, that's a good documentary, too, that's out on Tupac right now. Parrish Crooks, Tupac, that's his name, Parrish Crooks. His documentary is very good because it talks about his mother and what happened with him. But anyway, so rhythm is very important to us as a people, and I learned that by sitting in classes that were boring, that I failed, that I flunked, and that later on I went back and took the class again under another professor, and it was an entirely different story. So these are some of the kinds of things I was beginning to learn and to come in contact with at North Carolina Central University. And then after finishing North Carolina Central University, there's much more that we don't have time to get into now. You know, we can take our time. We don't take all the time. But anyway, after going to North Carolina Central University, I received a scholarship to go study at the University of Cincinnati in Cincinnati, Ohio. And when I went to Cincinnati, Ohio, found out that Cincinnati, you know, was a big, much bigger city than Durham, North Carolina, but it was also a city that was still in the South, still in southern Ohio, Cincinnati. And I saw brothers and sisters wearing gold, with gold teeth and gold around their chains, around their neck and around their wrists, and gold stars in their mouth. And we had gotten away from that here, you know, but then I had to think. I said, well, Cincinnati is not like New York or Chicago or not even Washington, D.C. And so they were behind in a lot of ways when I went to the state of Ohio to graduate school. And, Brother Marvin, that's a good place to stop with today. And we can go to our lines, and I'm going to get me a glass of water, and we can go to our lines and go to Slido and take some questions and comments. But I also want to send a shout out to my good brother and friend of mine, who I'm going to talk about a little when I come back, not today, but another day. Mm-hmm. Got a call today from Brother Mark Sutton, brother who used to work for me at my bookstore in Durham, North Carolina. Called me from Detroit, Michigan today, and he should be listening and calling in today. I told him about the program, and he has a lot of good things to say, and it'll be a good upcoming program because he's working now under some kind of contract at Motown, the Motown Museum in Detroit, Michigan, and also as a part of my Odyssey, and I'm jumping ahead, and I'll go back, and you'll hear it again, but as a part of my travels, when I opened up the first African-American bookstore in Durham, North Carolina in 1981 or 82, end of 81, the beginning of 82, oftentimes back then, black people were not coming into the bookstore to buy books, so I would have to take it on the road. I had to go and load my van up or down, depending on how you look at it, with books, and take books all over the country to different festivals and conferences to try to sell to keep the home front going. And so one place I used to go was Detroit, Michigan, to Hart Plaza. They would have every year an African-American cultural festival. And I think they still have it, according to Brother Mark, today, that they're about to, since the pandemic, pick it back up. And I have quite a few experiences of the Jewish community in Detroit, Michigan, trying to shut my booth down while I was there selling books. And I'll talk about that later, but they didn't like me selling Henry Ford's The International Jew, or selling Pawns in the Game, or selling Behold a Pale Horse, you see, like those kinds of books exposing the Jewish supremacy over America and her propaganda. They didn't like that. And so I have quite a few interesting experiences I will share at a later date about some of my travels after I opened the bookstore, but I don't want to jump there just yet. But Brother Marvin, I'll send it back to you, and we can open up for questions or comments, sir.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you for sharing. One quick question before you take your break. When it comes to music, right, how can we bridge that gap between the generations? Well, you talked about rap music and how it's so effective with our young people. How can we begin to, the older generations, begin to bridge that gap where we have issues with music?
That's a good one, Brother Marvin. I hadn't really thought about it, but I think it's going to be very difficult. Maybe somebody tuned in who might can answer it. I don't know if our brother from out in Seattle is tuned in today, who's a DJ on the radio commercial station. He might have some ideas about that if he's tuned in for today. But and hopefully he'll call in because you know I'll admit if I don't know something. But I hadn't thought about it, but I do know that it's just a big check when you listen to music today. Music that young people listen to, especially on the rap scene, it is quite a jump from listening to Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and Temptations and Mad Lads and Sam and Dave. And it's a big difference. So that's a good question. How can we bridge that gap? So that's something we just have to think about. I don't even want to deal with it right now, and I don't mind when that's something I'm just not quite prepared to deal with right now. And I might be, but just haven't thought about
right.
it. But that's a good question, though. How do we bridge that gap? Because I oftentimes hear older people who are not into rap and who didn't grow up during the time of rap music and the music that young people listen to condemn young people for the culture or the zeitgeist, as they call it, the term. That's another term, the zeitgeist that goes along with, or the trends that goes along with the culture of rap music. When you talk about the wearing of the pants and the wearing of the hair and the shoe hairstyles and the tattoos and all the kinds of things that go along with that. You know, people talk about the young people, but I try not to do that because I look back at the fact that, because I got a friend, for example, he does not like seeing the brothers playing basketball and football wearing the hairstyles, as you know, Brother Marvin, the very creative locks and half locks and parts down the middle and down the side and just raise the edges in the top and all kinds of styles that the brothers wear and the sisters, but especially the brothers. He doesn't like that. He condemns that because he's just stuck back in the day and thinks that everybody should have a haircut and a shave. You see, so that's another good discussion for another time, but I do not condemn that.
True.
Because I see young people, at least they're thinking. And since they are thinking and questioning, if they can take that thinking, and which they are doing to a certain extent, and I use Kyrie Irving as an example and other young brothers who are beginning to try to find out who we are and who they are as people, they're beginning to question. in the same way they question these haircuts that we used to wear and these clean-shaven faces with all these bumps and all that we had to deal with. They're questioning it, and they have an alternative. They're wearing it the way they want to. And some of them are beginning to take it and question our teaching and our training and begin to say, now, wait a minute. Didn't we have a history before slavery? What were we doing before coming on the slave ship? They're beginning to question and analyze. So any time that you are beginning to question and to place something into your analytical mental box and to begin to analyze and synthesize and to do some of those things and to, you know, come up with a new thesis about things, I think it's good. I don't condemn it. But I hear people talking about the way the brothers dress. But look at how we did in the 60s. One red pant, one green pant, one pants and wide leg bell bottoms and platform shoes, you know. So, and at least most of the brothers and sisters, they wear natural hair. We had that concholine and that Duke's pomade and tuxedo and new Nile in our hair. And that lie that Malcolm X talked about in his autobiography, to slick our hair back to make it like white folks' hair. We had all that. At least whatever they're doing is an alternative, and it is natural. So I like to take the good from it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I appreciate you sharing and your very, very thoughtfulness. All right, 845-277-9250 is the number to call. Having some difficulty with Slido today. So we're just going to have to go right into the lines, Dr. Bruce. Hope you don't mind.
All right, let's go. You know, I like to hear them voices.
All right, I'm going over
to... I said just like I meant to say it, too. I like to hear them voices. Now, some people, ooh, he talks right. like the white. You know, but we,
right,
we don't
going
have to
over
do...
To...
Okay, I'll let you agree. I just have another statement by Bob Marley, you know, just real quick. Bob Marley, oftentimes when he was interviewed, people would, and he spoke the English language perfectly, but I've heard him say oftentimes he knew how to speak it, but he'd say it just to be contrary and to let them know that you don't have to be like them, speak like them, walk like them, talk like them, be yourself, be who you are, you know. So that's why oftentimes I say, oh, yeah. Let's go on over to the phone line. Let's see what they talking about.
All right, we're going over to the phone lines to see what they talking about. What y'all talking about today? All right, we're going to 470 is the first three, last four, 6868. You're live. You're on with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment? 6868, you're live. Got your hand
hello,
up.
Hello,
come
hello,
on.
Can you hear me?
Hey, welcome. Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to say this is one show I said I cannot miss. I'm at the plantation right now, and I just stepped outside just in case my number came up. And it was very interesting. And also Dr. Bridges, a gentleman, I was telling him that you was on the air. He said to tell you hello. I got to give you the message. His name is Joe Larry.
Is his last name Wilson?
Joe Larry, not Dick Terry.
Right, Joe Larry Wilson. I know him. I remember him. I can tell some stories about growing up with him.
Just say Joe Larry, you would know.
Did you tell him about this, ma'am?
Yes, I just that's how it came up.
So he's listening. He's listening today.
He saw a little bit. He's on the clock too. We're all on the clock.
Okay,
today.
On the plantation. I got you.
Like I said, I tipped out. Right.
Okay.
I tipped out so I could, you know, go ahead and answer the phone call.
Brother
so
Marvin,
she's
right.
Right. She was just stealing away.
So
she's stealing away, Bruce. Stealing away.
Okay.
Yeah, she's stealing away.
All right.
Still away.
Yeah, but yeah, I
Thank
did.
You,
I made it my business not to miss this show. Not to miss the show today.
All right.
And this
Thank
was
you
surviving.
So very much. All right. Thank you. And
All
keep
right.
listening.
Thank you.
All right,
yes,
thank you.
Brother
I
Marvin,
will.
Let's make sure you make it back in there without any problems. All right, thank you, sister.
Hello.
All right, let's go on over to 704-1319, 1319. You're on live with the Empowerment Saturday, African American Empowerment. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? 1319-704. I'm just listening today. Come on, talk to us today, folks. All right, let's see if we can go on down
to who is this, brother? Talk to us, brother. Say something, brother.
All right, I'm going back to 704-1319. Maybe you missed the first call. I'm going to give you one more chance. Going once, 1319. Going twice. Got to go. Love you, though.
Okay, I guess they don't want to talk.
All right, let's go on down to.
They're going to make me stop talking. If they stop talking like that, I'm going to stop being on the program. They don't want to talk. I'm going to stop talking.
Don't you stop.
I don't turn the other cheek. I'm eye for eye, two for two. They do me like I'm doing
like
that.
We got to work with our people, Dr. Bruce. 0675 804 0675. If you have a question or comment, statement for Dr. Bruce. 0675.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I can truthfully say that I have been pleasantly pleased by everything that I've heard from the very beginning. I am sitting here actively listening, and my mind went to a movie by John Singleton in the 1990s called Higher Learning, when Dr. Bruce was talking. And, you know, it talked about how, you know, kids need critical thinking skills when they get to a college level. And, you know, during that time, I think it was a college in Columbia University in South Carolina.
That's right.
How they struggled because they were thinking inside of a box. And when you get to a college level, a lot of them were there on scholarships, sports scholarships or, you know, other scholarships, but, you know, they weren't ready for college life, really. And I think about Larry Fishburne, who was a professor, and how everyone thought he was hard on them, but he needed to be hard on them so they could see how the real world, you know, how the real world is. You know, the world don't, you know, owe you anything. You got to earn everything that you get. So just listening made my mind go back to that movie in the 1990s by John Singleton, and I agree and concur with almost everything that has been said. I love the poem by Sister Benita. I enjoyed what George was talking about, and you also, Dr. Bruce. And this is the first
time
I've listened to this program from the beginning.
Oh, really?
And I can truthfully say I have been pleasantly pleased, and I do believe that repetition helps you learn better, and that there are a lot of teachers in school that should not be there. And when my kids were going to school, I always said that the teachers needed a cultural awareness class so they could know how to teach my child because they were a little bit different. So I'm pleasantly pleased about what I've heard today. Thank you.
Thank you, and sister,
right.
Become
Thank
one
you,
of
sister.
Our regular listeners. Be with us. I'm on from time to time, and we have other good people on also. So start tuning in on every Saturday.
Okay. I think I will. I have tuned in the past, but I have not listened to the whole entire program. But I am pleasantly pleased, and I will tune in again.
All right. Thank you, sister. Amen to that. All right.
Brother Mark, that was a good one, wasn't it?
Please, yes. Pleasantly please. All right.
And she said a couple of things I want to respond to, and that is about the critical thinking. She's very, very, very much correct about we have to begin to think critically and to analyze things, and that's oftentimes something that we're not taught to do. We're just taught to accept. And I can recall, which goes back to our subject for today, which I'm talking about myself today. I can recall when I first started teaching, a lot of the students, the black students who I was teaching, were thought that I was very hard on them. But I wasn't being hard. I might have been hard when it came to giving out information and teaching and making sure that they were thinking critically. But when it came time for grading, I had another professor who sometimes would work with me in certain courses. And, oh, man, I love him. I love him. I love him. He's gone on to the ancestors. A brother named Dr. Ernest Mason taught at NCCU. And we were grading papers one day, and he had to tell me, that was hard and difficult in the classroom, and I also was hard on the grades. And we were teaching that, as a matter of fact, a lot of people don't know this, but we were really responsible for starting the African Studies program at North Carolina State University, and we were grading papers, and he would tell me, he would say, well, he said, brother, don't be so hard on these students, because we're here as black students at a white school. He said, give them a break. He said, you know, these white kids that graduate and get these good grades, it's not that they're so smart. These teachers are their mothers, their fathers, their doctors, their dentists, and they're looking out for them and as a community. He said, so if they come to class and they try and they halfway learn, don't hold them back. So anyway, let's go on, Brother Marvin. I could, we'll talk more about that later. I got, you know,
all right.
Go ahead. Let's see what,
all right. It's all right. All right. Let's go on over to 334-0148. 0148, you're up next. You're live. A question or comment for Dr. Bruce.
Real quick, thank you for picking my call. All hail the HBCU, Southern University in the house in Louisiana. And so we all have
all right.
that commonality, Dr. Bruce Bridges. Thank you so very much for sharing your story, sir. And until next time, peace and blessings.
All right.
All right. All right, brother.
And you know, and just a quick comment about the brother there, because I'd like to respond. And that is, he mentioned Southern University down in Baton Rouge. My good friend and mentor, who I always like to shout his name out, who is deceased. I mean, not deceased. No, please, please. Who is incarcerated right now? And you might look at that as deceased, but he's very much alive. Even though the history of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee called SNCC is trying to write him out of history, H. Rapp Brown is incarcerated, still living today, the only leader of SNCC that's still living, but you hear nothing about him. He went to Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where he was from, and he said that he always would wonder what would happen at the white college on the other side of town, but he couldn't go to the white college, so segregation made him go to Southern University. So when brother that just called mentioned Southern University, he made me think about Jamil El-Amin or brother H. Rapp Brown. And to those who are tuned in, not familiar, go on YouTube. Listen to something by H. Rapp Brown. He was one of my inspirations during the 1960s movement because he stood up to this country and said, hell no, we won't go, as Stokely Carmichael did, but he also said that violence is as American as cherry pie. And you start talking about black people being violent, look at how America got this country from the native indigenous black people who were here. They got it through what? Violence. So they wanted
us
to be nonviolent, but if you want us to be nonviolent, you, slave master, you be nonviolent too.
Mm. All right. All right. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday with Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and Brother Marvin here. We're going back to the lines again, 804-5416-5416. You're live. You're up. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, as always, I enjoy your program, Brother Marvin. I'm just glad I was able to tune in. Two comments I want to make. One, he talked about he said something about rap music and how the newer generation dealt with rap music in terms of the rhythms of rap music, et cetera, and I do appreciate that. It hit the scene. It took over some of the music industry. My comment, though, is what sometimes what bothers me is there's a level of profanity that
we
really
right, bro.
I like the rhythm, but we need to get something that's not as profane, and we need to. You know, I came
right.
up with Gil Scott-Heron, you know, in a bottle, but it was something, there's a true message there, and it was a rhythm, and some other artists at that time, I'm 68 years old, so I'm kind of dating myself, but true music, not just, stop your mama, kill somebody, da-da-da-da, you know, that's just, I was like, turn it off. Now, the same people that produced that, they can have a positive message, and we need to emphasize. I mean, it all of that stop your mama, do all this craziness, sales, you know, the money is out the roof, millions and billions of dollars. But we need to do something to give some of these youth better direction, and it's out there, it's in them. and we need to do more to applaud him. He hit that. He touched on that, and I think that's very important that we do that in terms of emphasizing. You know, you can apply your gift. That's a gift that that generation has, but we need to be more inspirational. When I was coming up as a young kid in the 60s, you know, I was inspired by, you know, doing the what was going on. What's going on? You know, the sound of Philadelphia, the sound of Detroit was inspiring me to do positive things, not all this negatives. That, you know, so anyway, I'm going to cut it off. I think you understand what the point I'm trying to make. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Brother John. Appreciate you calling. Go ahead, Dr. Bruce.
Yeah, I was about to say I agree with that brother 100%. He made it clarified it probably a little more than I did. But the rap is good. But exactly as he said, the words that they use and the rhythm and rhymes that they could be used in a much more positive form than many of the words are being used in, it would be better. And he made me think when he mentioned, he said he couldn't think of anybody else. But you got all this relates to what I was talking about today too. We were listening to Gil Scott-Heron, as he said, but we were also listening to The Last Poets, Abiodun Abiwole, and we were listening to New York, The Big Apple. We were listening to Gash Man. We were listening to Black Folk, What Y'all Gonna Do? All these poems that were being written and being put to music, and we were also listening to the great writers like Sister Sonia Sanchez, who is still around. We were listening to people like Bambi, the village poet, and we were listening to people like Sister Nikki Giovanni at the time. We were listening to Muhammad Toure. He was another poet. But the poets and the writers were beginning to write poetry that related to what we were doing as people. So I agree with that brother 100%. And remember, the revolution will not be televised. Okay.
You got that right. Would not be televised at all. All right, let's go on over to, let's see where we are. 1683, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, good afternoon, brothers, and peace to all that's in the sound of my voice. And thanks for the opportunity. I'm going to say, Dr. Bruce, as usual, we're on the same page again in our thinking, and along those lines, I was, you know, me being in the school system still and up in the city of Richmond, I hear all the time how this generation don't get it, that this generation just ain't with it. What's wrong with this generation and so forth. So last week I put some on Facebook along those lines. I said, we always asking what's wrong with this generation or our children, our future, as our parents asked what was wrong with us, and then their parents asked what was wrong with them, and their parents asked what was wrong with them, and their parents asked
That's
what
right.
was wrong with them. And if we keep asking, those of us asking that question should then realize that what's wrong with them is us. And it led me to think about, to remember an old business expression, and pardon my French here, but the business expression was shit in, shit out. Shit in, shit out. And so we get upset because we put a lot of shit into our children, and we don't like this shit coming out.
And the reason it's coming out is we put it in.
Because we put it in, and we keep putting it in, and keep putting it in, but we don't like to see it coming out. What do we think is going to come out? And I said, well, look at the example. And Dr. Bruce, I went back to what you just talked about, the Pledge of Allegiance. I said, we have taught our children the Pledge of Allegiance, and in fact, it's the first thing they hear in school every day, the Pledge of Allegiance. And I broke the pledge down. What is allegiance? And I defined it through Webster and said what allegiance was and so forth. Basically, loyalty and devotion. It's to your Lord, to your liver, you know, what you're doing. So we teaching our children, we have taught our children generation after generation after generation after generation to be loyal and devoted to your master. Former master. You know, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And we know there's no liberty. We know there's no justice. And what the hell does under God mean? It doesn't mean that God is in control of it. It does not mean according to God, because if it did, we'd be pledging allegiance to God. We're pledging allegiance to our enemy, and we have not even taught our children to pledge allegiance to themselves, to each other, to love yourself. That's where your pledge should be. That's where your loyalty should be. That's where our devotion should be. It should be to us, first and foremost. And that's not kicking anybody else to the curb. I'm saying we need to do for self first. Love ourselves, pledge to ourselves first, and do for us. And if somebody gets pissed off about by us doing that, let them get pissed off. But we need to pledge to ourselves, brother. That's why I said, Dr. Bruce, when I heard you talking earlier today, I said, Manny was right on point with that, because I just did something on Facebook last week about that. And I just said, I'm just thinking out loud.
Repeat it and do it again, brother. Put it back out there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, brother. Thank y'all for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
Just real quick, brother Marvin. And you know that brother. That's why I like to hear from the callers. Sometimes they don't say anything, and I understand they don't want to talk sometimes. But it really helps me too, because when that brother just made a statement about the rap music again, like this past brother did about our Pledge of Allegiance, it made me think about the fact when we talk about young people again. When we look at that music industry, young people. Rappers did take control of their product. They produced their own CDs in their own basements or wherever they did, in their own offices in the house, in the room or whatever, bedroom. And when they produced them, they copied them and put them out and sold them out of their cars. And that hurt Sony. And that hurt Magnavox and some of those other, Memorex and some of those other companies that produce music for us. So they began to take control of that music, and that's one reason white people don't like black people to take control of themselves, of their own music, of their own product. These young people that we condemn, they started clothing lines. Whether you like the way the pants fit or the shirts looked around your waist, they had FUBU, and they still have Nipsey Hussle out in L.A. He had a clothing line and was doing things. They were doing things themselves and pulling away from the slave master, and that's what they don't like. Because when you begin to think for yourself and wear different hairstyles and wear different clothes, it shows you're thinking for yourself, and eventually you'll take that thinking for yourself and extend it out into other things and become independent. And that's what they really, really, really don't like. So I just wanted to just add to that, because look, why did Otis Redding die? We don't have time to go into it right now. Otis Redding was beginning to think for himself. Next thing you know, he's killed on an airplane crash over in New Wisconsin. What happened to Bob Marley? All of a sudden he foot cancer. Bob Marley was starting his own record company called Tuff Gong, pulling away from Chris Blackwell, the white man over in England who started Island Records. What was happening to Sam Cooke? Sam Cooke was leaving Specialty Records and taking with him the Soul Stirrers and taking with him Johnny Taylor and began to start their own company. Something happened to Sam Cooke. Something happened to Bob Marley. Something happened to Otis Redding. Look at Joe Tex. And it goes on. Joe Tex became a member of the Nation of Islam music because you're pulling money away from them and bringing it to yourself and your own people. And when you do that, the slave master does not like it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. The thing is, you got to think for yourself. Got to right now. If you are a man, a woman of color, black, Negro, colored, you got to start thinking for yourself. Let's go on over to 919-7789. We're back with 919 again. 7789, you're live. Do you have a question or comment?
Thank you. I just wanted to basically comment on the gentleman that last spoke about pledging allegiance. I really enjoyed his comments. I agree with them in totality. The next comment I would like to make is concerning Dr. Bridges' Odyssey. I have been listening to him for, I won't say how many years. He's been a friend of mine for quite a few years. As a matter of fact, his life experience has been basically part of mine. I've known him for a long time. Even when he was about 14 years old, he had probably done more than most grown people. He used to write for a black As a matter of fact, I think it was the only black paper in Durham. It was called the Carolina Times, and at 14, he used to have an article printed in that paper every week, writing for the news at 14. And then that was around the time he started working with the civil rights movement. And he would make speeches. He was a very, very smart kid above his time. I used to call him a man child.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was writing. He was publishing papers. And then I think about 16, he became interested in the black Muslims, Nation of Islam. He started going to the mosque, and he was really wanted to know what Islam was about. And so he went often. He really enjoyed going, reading about Malcolm. And then after that, he went on to school. And like he all told you, he was very active on campus. And at the time I left Durham, I was in nursing school. And he was still at Central. And then he left and went on to Ohio or whatever. And by the time I came back, he had got the first black bookstore, I think, if I'm not mistaken, possibly in North Carolina. Because he had one in Durham, Greensboro, and Charlotte. So anyway, he's a very astute person. And the way he is today, he's always been that way. And I just wanted to make that comment to kind of speak on his odyssey. And like you say, there's much more, but I don't have the time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you for calling. All right, let's squeeze one more in. I got to get old Sister Benita in before we wrap up today. 0946, you're live.
Have
a question or comment.
Yes. Yes, good evening. You know, our children are who they are because of who we were. And we have to be honest. Mm. Even though we were singing love songs and even though we were having rent parties, people were stepping out on one another. People were beating up their wives. Children were being molested. We had, back in the 60s, I'm not a 60s baby per se, but it was a costume. We didn't own it. We had the aesthetics of the black movement. But love takes care of its own. So when all that partying was going on, children didn't have their fathers at home. Women were going through all kinds of things in the midst of all of that. So our children are real because they're calling us out on it. They don't care that we can quote black history. Hey, Dad, I don't even know you. You was hopping around on Mama, beating Mama. Don't come here with this 60s black stuff. These kids are real today. I don't have a problem with it. I'll be 60 years old this September. But I'm real. And what if we don't have love, none of this means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Love is the key. And I went back when George Floyd, I had seen another just police atrocity. And I asked the spirit, I said, why are the white people in power all over the world? And Spirit said, the people you perceive as white control what you believe is power. Power is the ability to do. When you take someone's power, you are dominating them. Love is about freedom. And we got to love one another. We got to be honest. We got to be real. We got to apologize to our family. So I know we're running out, but just remember, love covers everything.
Thank you, Sister Benita. Dr. Bruce, final comments.
After that, Brother Marvin, I think that's sufficient. I have none until I'm back on again in a few weeks.
All right. Brother George.
Yes, sir. I mean, it was an amazing show. I enjoyed every bit of it.
as a listener. But thank you, Brother Marvin.
All right. All right. There it is. Think for yourself. That's where we are now. Our children, if they're guided properly now with the skills that they have, they're the first truly free generation. Now we must lead and guide them. And lastly, continue to educate yourselves. Learn more. Don't be stuck in the past, but continue to learn everything that you can. Always work to improve who you are. And we'll see you next week on African American Empowerment Saturday. Until then, stay up, stay strong, and most of all, stay
free.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, man, child. Peace and blessings.